morning, shortly before 9, and when I was crossing the street back to the car, this lady said to me, "Look up, the building is on fire." And we looked up and we looked at each other, and it was like we were saying, "This is not real, this is..." Yeah, we didn't know what to think. And then people gathered, and more people, and we were looking up, and then this plane came from one side, and we just saw it behind the tower, and then you saw this big explosion on the front side.
From the studios of Freak Radio 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, it's time for the weekly Freak Show. Headlines and highlights for the week ending Saturday, September 15th, 2001. My name's the V-Man, and I'll be your host for this one-hour look back at the news and features not heard in or glanced over by the corporate-controlled media. On this week's program, we'll hear from a witness to Tuesday's attack on the World Trade Center in New York City, Santa Cruz residents' reaction to the situation, and later in the program, Kevin Danaher of Global Exchange speaks to Old Lady Scar Arms on where we go from here. All that and this week's Spotlight Sound. Stand by for the Weekly Freak Show coming up next. And now, headlines for the week ending Saturday, September 15th, 2001. 8 people were killed and 3 wounded after U.S. and British warplanes flew bombing raids on Sunday, September 10th, over Iraq's Wasl province, around 105 miles south of Baghdad. 365 people have been killed in U.S.-British raids since December 1998, and more than 1.5 million people, over half of them children under aged 5, have died as a direct result of U.S.-led economic sanctions since August 1990. Chanting, "Go to hell, Monsanto," almost 2 tons of genetically modified BT cotton was set ablaze on Thursday, September 13th, by more than 100 villagers in the South Sulawesi province of Indonesia. The St. Louis-based Monsanto Corporation began field tests of BT cotton after the Indonesian Minister of Agriculture issued a decree permitting limited sales of the genetically modified seed in February of this year. According to reports, the harvested crop has already been sold on local and foreign markets. The February decree was issued without public consultation. Villagers vow to return and destroy other field tests in the region. On Thursday, September 13th, an appeals court in the Swedish city of Gothenburg more than doubled the sentence of a 20-year-old German man convicted of rioting during the European Union summit there in June. The court sentenced the man to 16 months in prison, up from the 6 months he was given after pleading guilty during his initial trial earlier this summer. He will also be expelled from the country after serving his sentence and banned from re-entering Sweden for 10 years. The German, who was shot in the leg by police during rioting, asked for a reduced sentence, saying he threw stones at police but had not intended to participate in a planned and organized riot. But the appeals court sided with prosecutors, who asked for a tougher verdict. And finally, after more than 15 years of negotiations, a compromise was reached on Friday, September 14th, allowing for China, the world's most populous nation, to become a full member of the World Trade Organization at the next ministerial meeting scheduled to be held in Qatar in November. The agreement will require the communist-led nation to set a strict timetable to open up the country's economy to imports and adhere to global trading rules, and will also lead to an upsurge in Chinese exports to the rest of the world. China will also have to accord with a rules-based system it has never experienced. The more optimistic analysts hope the new rules will force China to become more accountable generally, but critics say entry into the WTO will not do anything to improve the rights of its citizens. In the 12 years since the Tiananmen Square massacre, China's human rights situation have remained as bleak as ever. Routine abuses include forced overtime, exposure to poisonous chemicals, and harassment and abuse by factory managers. Prison labor is also common in production for overseas markets. Thousands of political prisoners remain in jail. There is no free press or independent trade unions. And critics say hundreds of millions of Chinese workers will face new types of exploitation as a result of privatization policies. And those were headlines for the week ending Saturday, September 15th, 2001. In the first ever national ground stop of aircraft, all flights nationwide were stopped on the runway after at least four planes were hijacked from three East Coast airports. Two jets crashed into the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center in New York City, one crashed into the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., and another crashed in rural Somerset, Pennsylvania. Thomas Bierer lives in New York City and witnessed the second plane smash into the World Trade Center. He spoke with Freak Radio's John Malkin about what he witnessed.
I was having coffee in the morning, shortly before 9, and when I was crossing the street back to the car, this lady said to me, "Look up, the building is on fire." And we looked up and we looked at each other, and it was like we were saying, "Oh, this is not real, this is, yeah," we didn't know what to think. And then people gathered and more people, and we were looking up, and then this plane came from one side, and we just saw it behind the tower, and then you saw this big explosion on the front side towards our side.
You saw the plane, you saw that second plane hit the building. How far away were you?
I was on Greenwich Street, which you had a straight view onto the World Trade Center,
mm-hmm.
which is, what is it, I don't know, 20, 30 blocks. Uptown.
Everyone here is really affected by it. I imagine everyone there must be extremely even more affected by it.
If you walk the streets in New York, it's a different city yesterday, today. I mean, everyone is really in shock, and you see all these expressions on those faces. Everyone is kind of lost, and you feel like nobody knows what's happening.
Were there a lot of people hurt and a lot of, emergency vehicles driving around and that sort of stuff?
Today, the whole of downtown is blocked off. Below 14th Street, there's no car traffic, and then further down, there's no pedestrians allowed. You don't really see it. I mean, by watching the news, you see what's going on.
Mm.
But as I understand it, they can't even really start rescuing people because it's still burning and buildings are still going down.
A building just went down recently?
Well, there was the rest of one tower that came down just this afternoon or this evening. The last couple of floors that were left. And there's another building that they say might come down, so they can't really do anything. That's even more frustrating because, I don't know and I don't think that there are many people surviving, but the few, imagine you want to get to them as fast as possible.
Mm-hmm.
While you hear people talking about vengeance, this is not about taking revenge. You can't take revenge on a human life that's lost.
Do you hear people in New York talking about that?
Yeah, some people. That's their reaction. They counter violence with violence. But mostly people are just subdued. They're very quiet. And yesterday, people were not even talking. They were just. Everyone was just looking down. But today, you see people that discuss things.
A lot of people here are talking about the fact that some of the news footage has been about, with George Bush saying we're going to hunt down the people that did this and this sort of revenge thing. Did you see a lot of that on TV? Do you think there has been a lot of that?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what they use to. To kind of calm down the general public. I mean, what else can they do?
Yeah.
They don't know who, they don't know anything. They let it happen, sort of. I mean, they cannot blame themselves. So that's, the easy way out. Well, anyways, I mean, there has to be done something.
Yeah.
But, I don't feel that this is the appropriate reaction.
No, because it is purely just a tragedy. People hurt and suffering and dead. I'm glad that you guys are okay.
Yeah.
What did you say to the woman that you were standing by? What did you say anything to her or she to you?
Well, she, the first thing I was she said, look up, the tower is burning. And I look up, and she asked me, what is it? And I remember saying to her, oh, it must be an airplane, because you had these two big, it was slashed on two sides, the building. So that was my first reaction, the first tower. And then, when the second plane hit, we knew that was it. And then, there was a big crowd gathering all over the street, people coming from all sides. I mean, what can you say? Life goes on, of course, and that's probably the best reaction, to just go about your daily life.
When you go out shopping, are people automatically speaking about it or not speaking?
No, not really. Actually, no, I was surprised that, normally people would talk about things, but this time, no, nobody actually talks about it. Like at the grocery store, people didn't, immediately say, oh, what a tragedy, and da-da-da-da. Nothing, actually. But when you pass by, actually, some restaurants are open, and even yesterday night, you saw already people gathering and drinking, actually, talking about
it. I saw today a couple of houses and cars with big American flags.
My neighbor has a flag out on the fire escape.
I think it's probably going to be really a mess and really difficult there for some time.
Well, it's chaos. I mean, a whole part of the city is shut down. If you watch TV, you see it, but you can't really understand it unless you're here and see what a difference this makes, how a city can completely be shut down. I mean, even uptown, everything.
And the subway is shut down, or?
Subways are actually running pretty well, except for a few lines that go directly through World Trade Center. Yeah, I was surprised. The PATH train to New Jersey runs regular, so that was pretty fast, all the transportation, except for tunnels and bridges. The restaurants are the only businesses that are really open.
Really, everything else is closed?
Grocery stores.
Yeah, it must feel really strange to be in New York City with it.
Even stores that never close, like Barnes & Noble, they are shut. You would think these businesses, they close for no reason. They want to do business any day, but it's closed.
Are they going to open tomorrow, you think?
Well, they are trying to reopen as much as possible, as fast as possible. So there's talk about some of these financial institutions that they will resume work again tomorrow, but they're all down there, so I don't know unless they can relocate very fast, but I don't know about that. My sister, she works for Austrian Airlines, and yesterday they had all flights that were already in the air coming towards the States. They just turned around over the Atlantic immediately and went back. So that must have happened for all the European airlines. Is it a siren?
Yeah.
That's how it is. Non-stop.
That's been going on.
If there are no sirens, then there's fighter jets overhead.
Oh yeah, you have military airplanes flying over.
And apparently there are these big warships that are now protecting us out there. Meant 2,000-3,000 people.
Do you feel protected?
Actually, I do feel.
Yeah.
I really do. And not because of that. Obviously, they failed. Protect us, but I don't think that anyone will want to hit my little building here.
That image of the airplane going into the building is hard to believe that it's real.
You know, you look at it and you know that you see it, but just refuse to believe that it's happening. And even, as I said, even after so many times on TV, I've seen it maybe 100 times now, ever since, from every angle, but still. I know the buildings are no longer there, but I've even walked downtown a bit, and yes, they are no longer there, but still, it's really hard to grasp. What really gets to me is that, how many people actually died. The buildings themselves, I just couldn't care less, but all the people.
How many people are they saying, probably?
Nobody dares to even take a guess. Nobody wants to say it. There was not one report about a speculated number. They only came up with the numbers of all the firefighters.
There's hundreds of them,
hundreds.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there are almost 300 firefighters that died. But that's just the rescue workers. But, I mean, the actual victims that were in there, I don't know, 10,000, 20? I have no idea.
Some people I've spoken with say that maybe something that can be learned is that this sort of thing, things like this happen in other places, and that maybe people can have some better understanding of what it means to be bombed or attacked.
That was my first reaction too. Some people live with that every day in another part of the world. They have that every day. They see bombs falling and people dying. And you hear about it on the news, and you're really touched and everything, but it's so far that it's not really real for you. But I don't know, what did I learn? I mean, now that it's here next door, I don't know what I learned. I don't like to think that there's a lesson in it. It would be too hard a lesson. And that would mean that somebody was teaching us.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like to think of these people as my teacher. But what I do not feel for some reason is like hate or anything. Not even anger. Just a big sadness.
In the aftermath of the attacks, President Bush declared a national emergency and has declared war on terrorism. Reaction to the tragedy has ranged from anger and revenge to outright fear. Citizens gathered in Santa Cruz on the night of Wednesday, September 12th at the town clock to call for peace and understanding. I attended this vigil to get a perspective on people's responses. Here is a collection of their voices.
We all share the sadness and the devastation of what happened to people here. But all these people are going into, their reaction is blind patriotism. Their reaction is to talk about how great America is and how we have so much freedom and how we're so wonderful. And at the same time, they're saying things like, fuck the ragheads. And there are Arabs in our country that are being jumped simply because they're Arabs. And they're are Islamic groups getting death threat phone calls right now. And the hypocrisy of it has been, like, weighing on me ever since this happened. And of course, when things happen, since the majority of America is so uninformed, the reaction is bloodthirst and racism and finding a scapegoat. And we have an obligation to inform people that there's a different way.
I think, like, most people kind of stunned but expecting it, you know? You look at the foreign policy, United States, I says, well, you know, who could it have been? It could have been the Guatemalans, could have been the Lebanese, could have been the Grenadians, could have been the Koreans, could have been the Vietnamese, could have been the Chinese. You look at the legacy of our foreign policy, it could have been Iraqis, you could have been the South Africans, could have been the Nigerians, and I looked at it and I said, you know, it's finally hit home in a way that strikes the soul, and it was kind of shocking and sad and expected. I fear that we're going to lose a little bit of our liberty in a state that's going to be more security oriented. National security is now going to be individualized in this sense of using security to justify more stronger police actions kind of frightens me and disturbs me and worries me, because, you know, despite all of our shortcomings, we do have a lot of freedom and flexibility per se. I mean, it varies depending on how much money you have, but the fact is that you can come and go. And if you don't like it here, you can go somewhere else. That's not true in most places in the world. And I fear that that may not be true here too much longer. The other side of it is it's an act of war. And it's on our soil. And the winds of war are blowing real strong in this country now. And
what message could you speculate on the whoever may be responsible for these acts was trying to send?
I think the message that I got, I can't say what they're trying to send, is that there's nothing secure. The Pentagon represents national security, and it's very insecure. And capitalism, as it's represented in the financial markets in the World Trade Center, is very on shaky ground. You see the markets, what's happening in Japan, and already our economy was in a very precarious way. The other side of it is that the best way to save an economy is, in a capitalistic economy, is war. And that's what's going to happen. And that's pretty, that may be, that, I don't know what their message is, but that's the message I see that's coming.
Well, yeah, I want to nuke them. My name is Braun. Yes, I want to nuke them. Who? Whoever did it.
The country that's
supporting them. But we don't know that yet. Find out, then nuke them. I don't give a shit anymore. What they did is beyond.
How do you feel that
using more violence in response to violence?
Oh, give me that bullshit. I'm not a Gandhian. Just nuke the motherfuckers. I don't care about philosophy of nonviolence. Nuke them.
Well, what good would that serve? What greater purpose would that serve?
They bombed us. They bombed the Marines in Lebanon. They bombed the ship in Yemen. Time to stop this bullshit. That's what'll serve. Stop it now.
What do you feel about critics of the U.S. military who say that it's...
Fuck them. Fuck them all. Fuck the critics of the U.S. military. I'm tired of it. I'm a goddamn American, and I'm proud of it, and time we start fighting back. That's what I say.
What did we do as a nation to make people this angry?
Why is there so much hostility across the world towards the United States?
I implore you to take the compassion that I know you have by being here tonight and transcend any thoughts of anger or resentment or judgment. Transcend those thoughts to forgiveness and take the energy that you have in your heart and think of peace and think of right action and do it for the generations that don't live yet but have the right to live when we're gone from this earth. Open your heart to the enemies that you don't understand and have compassion for them who are frightened like we are, who don't understand as we don't understand. And remember, we are all one.
What branch of the military are you with?
Army.
You're with the Army. Do you? There's talk now that the U.S. is going to retaliate against whoever is responsible for the bombings, the plane hijacking bombings of the World Trade Center and Pentagon. There's also talk that they may use ground troops in whatever action they may take. Do you fear the possibility of seeing combat as a result of these actions in New York City and D.C.?
Not really. I think that more than likely what's going to happen is that they're just going to heighten security for a while, like they did with the Oklahoma City bombing, find out who did it, and then take the course of action that's necessary then. But more than likely, the United States will just back off and say, look, right, you did it. All right, it's done with. Let's shake hands and get it over with. I don't think there will be really any big combat situations that I'm going to have to deal with. I've basically been told that I've been just called back for more or less like a peacekeeping deal.
I never understood that these buildings existed because my mother never told me about them until I understood that they were gone. So I never understood exactly what happened. So that only made things worse for me, because I wasn't exactly sure what was going on. And so when I found out about it, I wasn't sure what to think, because I didn't know what was going on at all, so I'd never heard about the buildings.
Those people are hurting for a reason, and I just wish that we would ask ourselves those questions, look in the mirror, and then look at our children and our families and our loved ones and say, do we really want to continue this cycle? Revenge is just, you know, a stepping stone to more revenge. And I would have thought that we would have learned something by now. Today and yesterday, I was the most ashamed I've ever been of being an American. And I've always felt lucky to be an American, but I've never been proud of it. And I just hope that we can go out from here tonight. This makes me feel so good to see and remember that everybody's an individual with their own suffering. We need to just remember to be kinder, to be more open, and think less of ourselves.
People on those planes felt so strongly and felt that they were suffering so greatly that the only choice they had was to take their own lives, to make a point and to make a stand. If people are going to go to that extreme, to take their own lives and the lives of so many others, to show their point, they have a point that needs to be listened to.
I think that we are ready to declare war without even having an enemy. And I know, because precedent has been set in Vietnam, in Korea. It's been set again and again. If shelling goes on, it happened in Iraq. Innocents will die. Kids will die. Old people will die. Non-combatants will die.
Any of good compound. This is called Jim's Flight number 1721. You know, all those people you'd love to just get on the plane and never see them again. Join in. Bill Gates, Richard Branson, Jack Straw. Bye bye.
From the studios of Freak Radio 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, you're tuned to the Weekly Freak Show on Lake 101.7 FM in Muskego, Wisconsin. Please have a pen and paper ready to take down our contact info at the end of this one-hour broadcast. That was Chumbawamba with this week's spotlight sound, passenger list for doomed flight 1721, available as an MP3 file on the band's website, www.chumba.com. Last week, we spoke with Kevin Danaher of Global Exchange. This week, we hear from him again in the wake of the September 11th tragedy. He spoke with Freak Radio's Old Lady Scar Arms.
Kevin, can we start by talking about the official response to this in the U.S. government and what your thoughts are on that?
Yeah, I think it's really kind of despicable that our quote-unquote leaders use a tragedy when they should be focused on compassion for the victims and their families to use this to push their political agenda of bigger military budgets and bigger CIA budgets, even though the CIA totally blew it on detecting and preventing this kind of thing. That's supposedly why the American taxpayer spends $25, $30, $35 billion a year on, that's just the CIA, the NSA and these other intelligence agencies, the DIA, which we know nothing about, that are very, very secret and in some cases have bigger budgets than the CIA. All of that, what's that? What is that about? Is that protecting American people from this kind of attack, or is it protecting corporate profits abroad? I mean, what do they spend that money on? Now they're going to use this to, in a very crass way, push for not only killing people, innocent people abroad, there's start flying soon. And you see this crazy cycle of militarization. Let's assume that what they're putting out is true for a moment, that it is this guy Osama bin Laden and that he's sheltered by the Taliban government of Afghanistan. Who created these people? Who funded them? Who trained them? Who gave them their weapons? It was the U.S. CIA during the war against the Soviets in Afghanistan. When the Soviets invaded Afghanistan, the U.S. government covertly went in, supported the most right-wing, most fundamentalist extreme elements, because they figured, logically, that those would be the most vehement fighters against the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. So they created this monster, and then once it's not needed anymore, when the Soviets pull it out of Afghanistan, they just toss it like a used tissue and figure it's not going to come back to haunt you. Yeah, but then when you, you know, support the Saudi ruling elite, when you bomb Iraq, when you provide weapons to kill Palestinians and all those other things, these guys get angry. And when they get angry and they're frustrated because they don't own F-16s or whatever, they go out and they find other ways to inflict pain on America. And they don't make a distinction. You know, these guys are not like, you know, some kind of leftists or something that are going to make a distinction between the government of the United States and the people of the United States. Their whole thing is America's the devil. We're going to inflict pain on you. So there's this circle of violence that is only going to get broken if we, the people, the citizens of the planet, stand up and say, wait a minute, we don't want to go the way of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict where violence on either side strengthens the violent element on the other side, and you just get this descending spiral of violence and vengeance and hatred and racism. We want to go the other way. We've got to short circuit that cycle of violence and instead say, wait a minute, look, you don't fight fire with fire. You fight fire with water. You don't fight hate with hate. You fight hate with love. And that's what we've got to do. We've got to go to the best part of people's souls, the compassionate part. And that's up to us, the citizenry. We have to go out and educate and bring out the best in the public at this time of crisis.
It seems like a real challenge at this time when you see, well, according to the mainstream media anyway, it might not be a reality, but it's being reported that the majority of people in the country favor military action at this time. I've heard a lot of stories about people going out and buying up American flags, about them signing up in the army, and I've heard a lot of tales or stories that reports, shall I say, about racist attacks of people firing into mosques, a march of 300 in Chicago that targeted a mosque. But it seems like a real challenging time when people are caught up in a lot of fear and hatred to bring this out. What do you suggest? And also, if you could comment on the racist kind of backlash that's happening right now.
Well, I think you got to keep in mind this is a very diverse country and you get very diverse politics. I would argue that there's at least a third of the population of the United States, maybe even more, who are open to a peaceful, non-violent approach to dealing with these things. You got to remember that this is a crime. You know, they're doing this whole thing war. It's not war, it's a crime against humanity. It's not just a crime against America, it's a crime against humanity. Anytime you slaughter thousands of people, I don't care where it is, I don't care who the people are, I don't care who did it, and I don't care if they did it with tanks and bombs and F-16s or nuclear weapons, or they did it by hijacking an aircraft. This is a crime against humanity. This needs to be dealt with an international criminal court, which is the one government in the world that has done the most to prevent the establishment of an international criminal court. It's the U.S. government in Washington. So we need to think and understand, as citizens of the most powerful country in the world, we have a very special responsibility to be knowledgeable and informed and practical and compassionate in terms of what is U.S. foreign policy, what has it been historically, what is the impact of it on people around the world, and then what is the blowback, what is the impact in terms of it coming back, either for good or ill, on us, the American people, because we pay for it, and we are supposed to rule. The way our democracy, the fundamental conception that was written out by people like Thomas Jefferson, you know, on the left, we're really good at trashing the founders of this country for being slave owners and all that. Yeah, that's the bathwater. We want to throw that out. But there's a baby that we don't want to throw out with the bathwater, and that's the principle that sovereignty, ultimate political authority, resides in the people, not in the president or the Congress or the Supreme Court or the Constitution. It resides in the people. The fourth branch of government is the people. And that fourth branch of government, the citizens, is supposed to rule over the other three branches of government. Most Americans don't even know that. They don't even understand that. They don't grasp the power inherent in citizenship. And now we're at a stage in history where people are starting to talk about global citizenship. And that's what we were building in the globalization movement that now has been short-circuited and derailed by this tragedy, unfortunately. You know, these guys don't realize it, but they just gave a huge political gift to the right wing in the United States. And as you pointed out, it brings out all this racism and all this stupidity and ignorance. We have to counteract that. These are times that try people's souls. This is where we find out what our moral fiber really is. And it's time for people of peace and love and compassion and justice to stand up and in a very calm and clear voice say, no, there are two ways to go here. One is the racism, the ignorance, the violence, and retribution. And the other is to go to that kinder, loving part of our hearts. And everybody's got it there. If you listen to these construction workers that are doing the work in New York trying to find people in the rubble, they're not concerned. Their main concern is not kill them. If forced into that, they might say that. But their main concern is the compassion for the victims and their families and finding whoever's alive and, you know, rebuilding and things like that. And that's where we have to take people, not to the George Bush pound the drums of war kind of mentality, but to the mentality of the rescue workers of let's stay focused on what's needed right now is compassion, not attacking innocent Arab Americans or Muslim community who get associated by the media right away. We don't know who these guys are. Remember back when the Oklahoma City bombing happened, immediately after that there was all this anti-Arab hostility. Windows got broken, mosques got attacked, and then it turns out it's a right-wing white guy. Well, then did the American people run out and start attacking right-wing white guys? No, they didn't. This guy was a veteran of the Gulf War, Tim McVeigh. Did they start attacking veterans of the Gulf War? So we got to question the ignorance of all this racism that's going on. Here in San Francisco, we started a campaign to get posters put up in all the storefront windows. San Francisco is a hate-free zone. And to get that message out there, so sort of as a vaccination, as a preventative measure, to say to people, hey, we don't want to go, you don't counter hate with hate. That's just a stupid approach to things. And so we have to counter that hostility of the moment and this idiocy that's being put out by our quote-unquote leaders in Washington banging the drums of war and instead get people to think of compassion.
I'd like to talk about the media and their role in all this, if you could address that.
Well, what people have to realize is the media is not what most of us have been taught to think. Most of us have been taught to think that we are the consumers of the media. And they put out these products in their ads, the tires and toothpaste, and we're the consumers, and we buy them. The media are not entertainment media. They are not information media. They are commercial media. They exist to make money, with the exceptions of stations like yours and KPFA and, the all-too-rare exceptions, unfortunately. The major media are commercial media. They exist to make money. The way they make money is not by selling tires and toothpaste and the ads to us. Most of their money comes from corporate advertising. They are selling us. They are selling access to our minds. They're selling access to shaping our consciousness into getting us to believe that success as a human being is about the quantity of things you purchase and own and possess, which flies right in the face of everything Jesus and Muhammad and Buddha and Confucius and every other great spiritual mind ever said. It wasn't about material acquisition. It was about love and kindness and justice. So you think about what's going on here. It's like slavery. Slavery was the selling of human bodies. The corporate media is the selling of human minds to the corporate advertisers to not just make money and sell products, but to shape our very consciousness about what's important in life and how do you define success as a human being. So we need to realize they are using the public airwaves. That's our property. We, the people, own the public airwaves. It's the commons. It's like language. It's like the air. It's like the public parks, the rivers, the oceans. This belongs to all of humanity. And they have hijacked it. They have stolen it from us by buying off the politicians who give it to them free. You know, they pay less for their right to pollute our minds than you and I pay for a driver's license. And then they use it to sell us to the corporations and to turn us into commodity consumers. So we need to take back the airwaves. Otherwise, if we don't, we're just going to end up doing end-of-pipeline politics, standing outside the factory at the end of the pipeline, trying to deflect the damage of the mined pollution that they pumped out. Instead, we need to go into the factory and change the very structure of it. The nature of the communications industry in the United States should be non-profit, and maybe have a few channels. Of the 500 TV channels, you could have 5 or 10 that would be commercial and let them fight over it. The others should be all non-profit, non-commercial, exactly the opposite of the way it is now. And then we would have a chance to reach the American people with the truth. Let's lay out all the facts. Let's expose all the CIA documents about how they funded the Taliban and people like Osama bin Laden. Let's get all the information out to the American people. And I am totally confident in the wisdom of the American people. If they know the truth, if they get exposed to the facts, they're not idiots. They've just been misguided and misled. And that's our job as educators and activists, is to get that information out there to people and confront them with the truth.
Specifically, what do you think of the coverage of this incident? That's the ongoing 24-hour television and other coverage of this newspaper.
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with 24-hour focus. I think if they were focused on the right kinds of things, I think if they were doing as much digging into the history of where does terrorism come from and what is terrorism, you know, when the United States drops nuclear weapons on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, is that terrorism? Those weren't military targets. Those were civilian. You know, who established the pattern in the world of collateral damage is okay? Our former Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, explicitly in an interview said that the children being killed at a rate of 5,000 a month or something in Iraq from the sanctions, that was okay, that was acceptable to her. Well, if you establish that kind of ethic as the most powerful country in the world, the quote-unquote leader of the, quote, free world, then what is that going to send out as a message? You say, well, if the biggest moral authority in the world says it's okay to kill civilians, then fine. I mean, if you think about it, there is much more similarity between U.S. leaders and these terrorists than the media would ever admit, right? Because they bring on Kissinger and these kind of people right away. Kissinger? They have Henry Kissinger on TV commenting on these terrorists when he participated in killing over 1 million people in Vietnam. They purposely, him and Nixon, did carpet bombing of Hanoi and Haiphong, non-military cities, during the Christmas season because they knew it would demoralize people. You know, this is the kind of history that most Americans have been sheltered from. Well, we have to educate our fellow citizens. We should not shelter ourselves from the truth. The truth often hurts, but it has to be embraced and dealt with for all its consequences.
Kissinger was also involved in the atrocities in East Timor as well.
And Chile, and Angola, and Mozambique, and, you know, the list goes on.
Even in Harper's Magazine, they had a two-segment article about Kissinger.
From Christopher Hitchens' book, yeah. And there will eventually be an international criminal court which will try all of these people, no matter what their ideology, no matter what country they come from. And that is a day we should welcome and embrace. It is a day that will bring real democracy, real people's control, real participatory democracy closer to us. And that's a thing we should embrace and seek out and try to construct. You have evidence of people who are Sikhs from India, but because they wear turbans, they're being attacked. The basic problem is a spiritual problem. It's that the human mind has the ability to create the other. And whether it's the Nazis justifying their invasion of Russia in the late 30s, early 40s, by calling them Untermenschen, subhuman, or the slave trade being justified with racist ideologies, or the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II, or the current attacks on the Arab American community and Muslim community. This is wrong. It doesn't matter who does it. The killings in Rwanda between Tutsis and Hutus, you look at it and say, oh God, how could they look the same to me. How could they be killing each other? This is wrong. It's just wrong. Violence is wrong. And the sooner we realize that and start moving away from it and start pushing for a total demilitarization of the planet, for the elimination of all weapons of mass destruction, we don't need tanks and bombs and biological warfare and nuclear and all this other crap. And real leaders, real leaders who deserve the term leader should be pushing for a demilitarization of the planet. We could put that $800 billion a year that is now put into military, into healthcare and education. The United Nations estimates it would only take $30 billion to eliminate child starvation in this world. We have a child starving about every 4 seconds in the world. That could be eliminated with less than a tenth of what is spent on the military currently. This is an emergency thing that humanity needs to do. We are at a crossroads of history. We have the potential to do conscious evolution. It's the first time ever in human history that we can do conscious evolution, and we can either go in the direction of life values, human rights and the environment, or money values and the violence that's needed to support the money values and the money cycle that keeps putting more and more wealth into fewer and fewer hands and starving more and more people and depriving people of the basic necessities of life. We're at a crossroads, and we need to reach down inside ourselves and recognize the import of this moment in history. We have to make a choice. Are we going to go for life values or money values? And by that choice, a lot of other things are going to be determined. So we need to step up to the plate and sort of break out of our normal ruts that we're in. The only difference between a rut and a grave is the length. We need to jump out of our ruts and say, wait a minute, this is a historic moment. We need to stand up and be heard with voices of love and compassion.
There are those that would argue, though, that whoever was responsible, there are those who would argue, are only going to listen to punishment and retaliation, and they would argue that your view is unrealistic and that we do need an extremely strong military and we need to hurt those who hurt us. What would
The first point is that the U.S. military structure is totally inappropriate to the real threat. I mean, clearly, you know, I mean, they can take a nuclear bomb that they bought from Russia. Those are out there now in the black market. They can weld it into the hull of a ship and pull it into L.A. Harbor and say, okay, here's what we want. Or not even say what we want. Look at these guys. They didn't make any demands. The pilots, when they interview the pilots, they say, well, you know, we were trained for hijackers that wanted to be taken somewhere, wanted money. We weren't trained to deal with hijackers who don't care if they lose their lives. You know, when you get people so pissed off that they're willing to give up their lives, what do? Threaten them with the death penalty? That doesn't deter them. So, Gandhi had a good statement. He said, you know, the only way to seriously deal with an enemy is to make them a friend. And I know that sounds crazy, but you have to create conditions in the world that eliminate the causes of fanaticism. Fanaticism comes from injustice. If we can eliminate injustice and unnecessary suffering, then the basis for this kind of stuff goes away, and you can deal with it for what it is, a crime, and not war, but a crime, and you get the criminals, and you lock them up. And it's like any criminal, any street criminal, if we have a person who's killing here, you contain them. You put them in a facility where they can't hurt people. It's a very simple principle. And then we can have debates about, do you try and rehabilitate them or you just punish them and keep them out of society, whatever. But it's about containing people from doing violence. And I don't care who they are. We need to restrain everybody from doing violence because violence begets more violence. If
Henry
you do
Kissinger.
Eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, you end up with a lot of blind, toothless people. Mm-hmm. It's not the way to go.
Kevin, I heard that Global Exchange, Ruckus Society, and some other groups are rethinking things, canceling things.
What's going on is, in terms of the protests in Washington, September 29th and 30th, we're going to continue with some events and cancel others. The ones we're going to continue with are the educational teach-ins, vigils, those kind of things, the more educational focus and trying to stimulate the loving part of people's personas. But in terms of big mass street rallies, protests at the World Bank, IMF, that kind of stuff is going to be either scaled way down or not done, at least by the kinds of groups that we work with in the Mobilization for Global Justice. We think it would be totally inappropriate and very self-marginalizing for the global justice movement to go out in a big assertive demonstration against these institutions, which the IMF and the World Bank are probably going to cancel their meetings anyway. And then you raise the possibility of conflict with the police at a time where hundreds of police have just been killed, and the sense of solidarity within police forces would lead them to be a little bit more aggressive than normal, which is already too much. So the chances for not only people getting hurt, but also the movement getting a real bad black eye in the public mind, we have to keep in mind that the bullseye in this struggle is to reach the public mind with an alternative message about the way the world should go, the direction we should take the planet in terms of policy, and to go out there and do aggressive militant street protests at this time. Most people in leadership circles of the movement are saying that's inappropriate. But for people who have their tickets to D.C. or are planning to go, there still will be plenty of activities to participate in. There will be educational outreach, messaging, reaching the media, developing educational resources, rebuilding the peace movement, which we got to start doing that now. We shouldn't wait for the bombing to start. There's going to be all sorts of innocent victims somewhere in the Middle East that are going to need our solidarity and compassion. So that's the way we're trying to refocus the activism that's going on.
Is this a temporary changing of tactics?
In a certain sense, there's no more temporary. The whole world has changed now. You know, the history of the modern era will be marked by September 11th, 2001 as a turning point. But how that gets defined as a turning point is up for struggle. And we have to get out there and use it as a wake-up call that America cannot continue being an empire. We have to be one nation among many in a community of nations. Look at what Bush has done since he came to power. Pulled out of the Kyoto Accords, angered all the Europeans. He's pulled out of all sorts of international agreements that we've been part of. There's an isolation of Fortress America going on, and we as American citizens have the most responsibility of anybody to stop that movement toward Fortress America. Fortress America is going to get to be a real ugly, hateful place to live if we allow that to happen. So we have a very special responsibility as residents of this country to not allow that isolation of our country to go on. We need to reach out more and be more globalized at the grassroots people-to-people level rather than at the corporate money military level. When you get pummeled, and we just got slammed, the right wing just got a big gift in this country and around the world, and progressive forces have necessarily to duck their heads. And if you talk to comrades in New York or Washington, you'll really get a dose of that. I mean, we're lucky out here. You know, what we've got to deal with is very mild compared to what they're dealing with. The streets of Washington are full of police and military. It's a pulling back temporarily. The World Bank and IMF are going to have more meetings. They've got meetings scheduled for the spring in April. They've got meetings scheduled for next September 28th and 29th. In Washington, we're going to do big mobilizations of people, just as we did before, and we will stress nonviolent, militant, nonviolent street protest, as we have in the past, and there'll be a rebuilding of the movement. But when you get punched in the head and get knocked down on the pavement, you have to figure out how to get back up. And maybe you want to stay on your butt for a little while till the bad guy goes away or his attention gets focused somewhere else. We have a very strong movement here. It will be resilient. It will come back to what it was, but it's going to really test our abilities, and it's going to test our moral reserves, and we have to stand up to that historic test.
And that's all the time we have this week. Thanks for listening. The Weekly Freak Show is produced live in the studios of Freak Radio 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, and can also be heard on the Party Town Streaming Network online at www.partytown.com/radio. The interviews featured in this program are only a sample of the fine shows each week on Freak Radio. To hear it all, 24 hours a day, listen online at www.microradio.net/FRSC. That's www.microradio.net/FRSC. For questions and comments, send email to FRSC@microradio.net. That's FRSC@microradio.net, or snail mail to P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California 95061. That's P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California 95061. Or call area code 831-427-4523. That's 831-427-4523. Thanks to the A Infos Radio Project for distribution. Our theme music was arranged and performed by Neil Norman and his Cosmic Orchestra. For Old Lady Scar Arms, John Malkin, and everyone here at Freak Radio, my name's the V-Man, and that's a wrap.
Hello, America.